Good morning, Hope Ames. So the sermon today is not sponsored by Progressive, but if you've watched even 10 minutes of TV in the last 2 years, you've probably seen one of those Progressive commercials where they say you really can't help but take on some things that your parents taught you, whether you want to take them or not. They've passed something on to you. Now, the one thing that I don't love about that commercial is that it insinuates that you never want to take on the things that your parents did. You never want to become more like your parents, but I love my parents. I would love to be more like my parents. I think that they're awesome, and there's no doubt about it. There are so many things in my life that I do because of what my parents did when I was growing up. But do you ever notice that there were certain things that you did in your house growing up that you didn't know were weird until you lived somewhere else? So for the first 18 years of my life, living at home with my parents, I had a few of these things. But again, I didn't know about it until I moved away. One of these things is, in my family, when you get home and you open the door, you announce your presence to the entirety of the household. So you shout at the top of your lungs, "Hello!" And I started that because my dad, every single time he would get home, would walk in the door and be like, "Hello!" And he has a loud, booming voice. You may have heard him preach a sermon or two before, right? Like, he can really project that thing. And so you'd come in the house, you'd announce yourself to everybody, and I just thought, well, this is what you do. Until I went to college and I lived in a dorm room. And I'd open the door, "Hello!" I'm like, "What are you doing? This is so odd, this is so weird." And any roommate that I ever had, they would always tell me, like, "Danny, it is really odd. I don't need to know that you're home." Even my wife, Abby, has told me, like, "Danny, it's pretty odd that you do that." But it's just something that I adopted throughout my life. And there are things that you will pass on to your kids. There are things that you pass on to people that you lead, people that you mentor, anybody that you're kind of in charge of, or anybody that you set an example for in your life. You will pass something on to them. And something that I'd like for us to consider this morning is, what do you want the people after you to learn from you? There are some things that you'd really wish that they didn't take from you, right? And then there are the things that you really wish that you could share with them, but it's hard. Like, how do I give that to you? This is where we find ourselves in our series that we're using to kick off the year. Our annual theme this year is a church after God's own heart. And to be a church after God's own heart, we're remembering 10 goals that we believe that God gave us at the beginning of the decade that we announced to the congregation that we believe that God wanted us to do over the next 10 years. One of them is to be intergenerational, to be a church that passes something on to the people that come after us. And to be an intergenerational church, we said that we wanted to compete for the hearts of new generations of believers by developing highly creative, fully functional, grace-based, disciple-making ministries that will proclaim the gospel to 1 million youth and young adults over the next decade. And I'm very happy to report to you that we are well on our way to doing just that. And we're doing that in some ways through mass media and proclaiming the gospel to 1 million young adults and youth across the country and across the world. But right here at Hope Ames, we're seeing it happen in our congregation at a smaller level. And it's really powerful and it's really amazing. There's some pictures on the screen behind me that show you what's going on in our kids ministries and our Power Life and Ignition ministries and our Kairos ministry, which is our college ministry. It's really cool to see what God is doing. But this isn't something that we just came up with on our own. Rather, this is something that we're commanded to do through our faith. You heard about this in the Bible reading this morning. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, God is commanding his people through the prophet Moses to pass on this faith, to proclaim what they understood at that time as the gospel, the good news that God had for them, to the future generations. And so it says, "Commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these words of mine. Teach them to your children, so that as long as the sky remains above the earth, you and your children may flourish in the land the Lord swore to give you your ancestors." We have this responsibility. And I've been feeling this responsibility a lot over the last month. As you know, my wife and I, we welcomed our daughter Lainey last month, and she can't be here today. Her immune system's not super big yet, but she says hi and she wants to, you know, make sure that she appreciates all the gifts that you're sending her way. It's really wonderful. Okay, at least I imagine that she's doing that. We don't actually have these conversations, but I think I have this responsibility as one of her parents to pass this on to her. And it's something that I want to do. Now, I'll tell you that I'm using her as an illustration today because I think it works great, but also dozens of you have emailed me in the last month to tell me you don't post enough pictures of Lainey. So here you go, here's two pictures. But don't encourage it too much because I will not stop. it's like the only thing I talk about, right? I want her to have this. I hope she takes on a few things from me. I don't necessarily think that 18 years from now she'll be walking into her home away from home saying, hello! But I really want her to take on this faith. And it's this responsibility that I feel like I have as her parent. It's a responsibility that we all have to give to the next generation, to the people who come after us. God has chosen to do this through us. In fact, at the beginning of this chapter, it tells us this in Deuteronomy chapter 11. This is all the way back in verse 2. It says, keep in mind that I, meaning God is saying this through Moses, keep in mind that I'm not talking now to your children. They didn't see the miraculous signs and wonders that God performed in Egypt. See, remember, God's people in the book of Deuteronomy, they're about to enter into this new promised land that God has sworn to them and promised that they would receive. God's people, if you remember the history, they had lived in Egypt in slavery for 400 years. And God freed them from slavery, and he's promised them this new place to live in, but in their disobedience, they wandered for 40 years. But finally, in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is standing before the people, and he's reminding them of who their God is, and he's reminding them of what God desires for them as they enter into this land where they'll be free. So he says, here's God's rules, here's God's laws, here's God's regulations, not so that you would do them so that you can become free, but you are free, and this is how free people live. And God is telling them, I'm telling this to you. I did that and you saw it. You see, your kids, they didn't see the miraculous signs and wonders that he performed in Egypt, but you have seen the Lord perform all these mighty deeds with your own eyes. Look, God is not telling future generations, you're gonna have to go back into slavery. You're gonna have to go back into oppression. You're gonna have to go back into bad things for you in order for you to see how good God is. No. God won't do that. The way that God chooses to reach the next generations, to reach the people who come after us, through our words, through our deeds, through our actions. And what is the thing that he wants us to communicate to the people who come after us? He wants us to communicate this faith. And what's the faith? What's the legacy that we get to pass on? The legacy of God's family is freedom. You are born into freedom as a child of God. No matter where you live, no matter who lives over you, no matter who reigns over you, the freedom that you have in God is true freedom. And it's freedom that he has won for you. It is freedom that nobody can take away from you. The legacy of God's family, the faith that we present to the people who come after us, is freedom. We want them to know this is how free people live in the kingdom of God. This is what we want to pass on. And it's available to all the generations. And so we want to be this congregation where all generations are welcome to receive this. If you look around this room, you see all these different generations represented here. In fact, let's do a roll call. Are you ready? Now, I'm not totally sure, but is there anybody here from the silent generation? Would you, you're quiet, get it, right? Because silent generation, sorry. All right. I'm a dad. Dad jokes, huh? Okay, anybody here from the silent generation? It's okay if not, because you'll see what happens here. There might be, anyway, okay. Baby boom generation, show of hands, okay. We're booming in here today, all right, lots of you. Gen X, any Gen Xers in the house? Okay, right on, there you go. Hootie and the Blowfish, anyone? All right. Millennials, right here, I'm a millennial, okay, I see you, cool, we're doing well. Gen Z, any Gen Zers in the house? Okay, lots of you, right on. You kind of scare us, all right. Generation Alpha. Yeah! Let's give it up for Generation Alpha. I was really scared when I learned that there are now two generations younger than me. Wow, I'm starting to feel old. And when we think about this theoretically, we're like, yeah, of course we want all of you here, right? Because we think about these passages in the scriptures that tell us, yes, all generations will come together, and especially these new generations. What a treat, what a gift to have them here. We think about what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 19, the famous passage, let the children come to me, he says. Don't stop them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are like these children. And when Jesus said it, he meant it. But then all of a sudden, when they show up, we realize it's pretty difficult, isn't it? Theoretically, yes, we want them there. But realistically, it's not easy. And one thing that we will learn about intergenerational communities is it doesn't happen by accident. Listen, the reason why there are so many different generations represented in this room right now, the reason why you can walk into any one of our ministries that starts in our nursery all the way up to retired folks in our 50 plus and way beyond that, in our empty nesters and our seniors, the reason why there are folks in all these different generations, it's not by accident. Because you have to be intentional. As Christians, we have to try. People aren't just going to show up. They're not going to find us, but rather we're called to go out to them. Statistically speaking, this is what we see in the world around us. This is something that I found from Lifeway Research. 66% of young adults who attended church while they were in high school stopped attending as young adults. Pretty interesting. So sometimes we think like, oh, well, if I raise my kids in the faith and if they come to church with me, then no matter what, they will grow up and they'll attend church. And to a point, like, yeah, it does help a lot. Statistically speaking, if you develop habits with your kids of attending weekly worship and being involved in the congregation, there's a way higher chance that they will be a part of that when they grow up. And yet still, 66% of young adults who attended church in high school stopped attending as young adults. That's interesting. And what was even more interesting about that was the reason that young adults gave for this. Now, I know that it can scare us in thinking, oh man, I don't know, maybe it's the scandals of the church and those are very real and they need to be taken care of. Or, I don't know, maybe it's because the faith isn't relevant anymore and we need to do something that makes it more powerful for them. But that's not the reason that's given. Maybe it's because we don't have the right ministries. That's not the reason that it's given. The number one reason that young adults have given for why they stopped attending church once they entered into young adulthood was, I moved. Simple as that. The number one reason that they gave was, I moved. And it's not so difficult to imagine why. If you just go over to Iowa State University and you walk across campus, like first week of the semester, do you see freshmen doing that incredible juggling act of finding their classes, of finding their groups, of trying out for the club, the team, the Greek house, whatever it might be? And all of a sudden, they're like, well, I have to find a church too? And it's just another change. As if moving away from home for the first time isn't enough of a change. You find a church, and this is difficult. And what we find is people don't find the church, but the church has a responsibility of showing up where people are. This doesn't happen by accident. The reason why you look around this room and you see people of different generations is because you have answered the call. It's because you have a desire for generations that come after you to know him, to experience this faith, to experience this freedom. And it's not to say that the younger generations are more important than the older generations. It's that the older generations have seen what God has done in their lives. They've experienced his glory. They've experienced his freedom. They've experienced his love, and it overflows from them that they cannot contain it for themselves, that instead they intentionally share it with the people around them. It's something that happens. It's not an accident, but it is an intentional effort to show up where they are. And this is a huge reason why we want to have a physical building here in Ames. Over the last 6.5 years, we've been meeting as a mobile site. We set up, we tear down here in the auditorium every single week. But one day, I think kind of soon, we'll be here. This is the location where we'll be building a permanent church home here in Ames. It's just west of campus. You can see Jack's in that like top-ish right corner of the picture, and this is land that we're going to be building a building on. And please know this, we're not building a building so that we can pat ourselves on the back because this church has grown and now we have a new opportunity. We're not building this building as a gift to ourselves, rather this is a gift to the community. We are building this building because this is a place where people are. It's a place where people can access. A lot of you know that a couple of years ago, we gave and raised funds in order to purchase a piece of land that was up in North Ames. And then very recently, the congregation voted when we had an opportunity to move to this land because it was more accessible to more people. And I just got to note this, there are plenty of people who were for this and wanted to be a part of this, even though it meant that they were going to be driving a few extra minutes to get to church on Sundays. And you did it, why? Because you know that it's not the responsibility of people to find the church, but it's the responsibility of the church to show up where people are. And this is where people are. And so we intentionally go out and we seek them. And look what God's doing through you. As your pastor, I'm blown away. Oh my goodness, I think I have the easiest job in the world for pastors because of what you do, how much of a heart you have for this. And look at what God is doing through you. as we compete for their hearts. This is really cool to see this. A congregation of our size seeing these kinds of numbers. 239 kids were at our VBS at this campus this past summer. About 58 kids show up weekly to Hope Kids across the hallway in the gym at the 9 o'clock service. We have 72 students in our Power Life and Ignition, that's junior and senior high ministries, confirmation, and then our high school group as well. There's 325 students on average who show up to our college ministry on Wednesday nights. It's incredible. And it's what God is doing through you because you have intentionally decided, we're going to show up where people are. And as your pastor, all I can say is thank you. It is one of my favorite things about this congregation. It's that you have this desire to be intergenerational. It doesn't happen by accident. And so this sermon is not to tell you we're going to fix things and, you know, we're going to lecture you so that we start doing this. It's to remind ourselves of the why. This is why we're doing it. We're doing it because we've seen what God has done. We've experienced his glory. We've experienced his freedom. And we want to share it with the world around us. Intergenerational churches are not an accident, but intergenerational churches, they're also messy. You know, you only have to watch TV for 10 minutes to see that progressive ad. You only have to be a Christian for about 10 minutes to see that grace is really messy. To understand the kind of grace that's required to clean up my mess. And to understand the kind of grace that's required to love the mess in other people's lives. And for them to love the mess in my life. Intergenerational churches are messy because we say to ourselves, well, I would love for young people to be a part of this. I would love it because they bring so much energy and creativity. But then all of a sudden you realize that they talk kind of funny. And they don't dress like you do. And they don't know what a landline is. You're like, oh, so I don't know if I want to be around them. They make me feel old. And they're challenging my way of life. Please know this. As somebody who preaches regularly at our college ministry called Kairos, there are so many times where I stand up in front of them and I say something that's funny according to their slang and I am the only one in the room who doesn't know. It's a terrifying experience. After Kairos one night, a student came up to me and he asked, hey, so when did you graduate high school? And I was like, oh, 2010. He's like, first off, he laughed at me. Second, he said, good for you. I'm like, whoa. You only say that to somebody if you think they're old. Like, how do you see me? Like, oh, you know, nothing can stop you. you prune old man, right? Like, what? Like, good for you. You're getting out of the house. Nothing stops you, Pastor Householder. I'm like, that is my dad's name. Who do you think you're talking to? They make you feel kind of uncomfortable. They challenge your way of life. Young people are going to challenge your way of life, not just if you have kids in the house because they change your schedules. I've realized that over the last month, no doubt about it. But also because they show up and they have different ideas, they have different perspectives, they have different values. And it is so easy to fall for the temptation of saying, you know, if you're different than me, then I guess you're not going to be a part of this. And we start to think for the young people to be a part of our church, they got to be more like us. That's not the case. Sometimes we think, you know, it's just the newest generation. They're the ones that don't get it. But somebody probably said that about you too, right? I mean, there's something that's been said, you know, for so long, it's almost been cliche. Have you ever said something like this? Young people, they think they know everything and they're always quite sure about it. And that's almost like a mini proverb that we say these days, like young people think they know everything. As if this newest generation is the only one that's ever stirred the pot for us. That quote, do you know who coined it for the first time? Aristotle in the 4th century BC. Turns out somebody said it about your generation. They certainly said it about my generation. They'll say it about all the generations to come. Because young people are always going to shake up the status quo, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean that they're always right, but it means that they come in with this new set of values. They come in with this new set of perspectives. And there are plenty of different things that we can disagree on. But the amazing thing is that Jesus is the one who reaches all of us, and his love is good enough for all of us. But it's so tempting to think, if you're different than me, we can't be in the same room. And these generational gaps sometimes cause the biggest wars in our society these days. The generational wars. We start to fight with one another about what really matters and what's really important. And we start to ask this question, how can I know the future will be okay when they fill in the blank? How can I know the future will be okay when they vote this way? And how can I be sure of the future when they think this way, when they talk this way, when they listen to that kind of music? How can I be sure about the future when they, and you fill in the blank. And I think that I can understand why we do this, right? Because every single one of us, we want to get to the end of our lives and know that it mattered. We want to get to the end of our lives and know that we were important. We want to get to the end of our lives and know that we made a difference. And so most of us, you're trying pretty hard. And then somebody new comes in and they shake up the status quo, and all of a sudden you're starting to ask, is everything I did not matter to you? Was I never important? Was all of this for a waste? And it starts to build a barrier. Meanwhile, I think that this is interesting. Young people, they have similar concerns. It's just kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum. It also has to do with mattering. It also has to do with being important. It also has to do with making a difference. But they're not saying, oh, I'm scared that I don't matter anymore. But rather, the conversations that I'm having with young people over the last 6.5 years in a university city is, I'm scared that I'll never matter. So on one side, we've got people saying, you don't think I matter anymore. And on the other side, it's, I'll never matter in this world. And what is it? It's fear-based. And we're afraid of each other. And then either we fight or we just are the opposite of our authentic selves in front of one another. Have you ever seen a conversation that takes place between like a Gen Zer and somebody of like a generation older than them? It's like the most interesting thing. I'm not picking on Gen X, but let's just imagine, right? So like Gen Z and Gen X, they're having this conversation. You got the Gen Xer who sees the Gen Z walk into the room. They're like, well, I'm cool. You know, they're like, hey, I'm hip. I'm with it. I still wear my backwards hat. Bro, you want to hang, right? And it's like, wait, that's not what they're coming into the room for a conversation for. And meanwhile, the Gen Zer comes in the room and they've got on their suit and tie. They've got a resume and they're trying to impress you with sorts of things. And they're walking into their first ever job interview, terrified that they'll never make it. And all of a sudden they're saying things like, here's my goals and desires and here's my 5-year plan. And I don't even know what a 5-year plan is. And we're just like trying to impress each other. We're trying to prove to one another, I matter. What if 2.5 billion Christians across the world decided that it wouldn't be us presenting ourselves as important in conversations anymore? What if instead of proving to someone that I matter, we would instead be in conversations and desperately proving to the other person, you matter to me. You matter to me because you are so important to God that he decided his creation wasn't done without you. The only way that that happens is freedom. Freedom from fear. And the cool thing is, the Bible actually gives us this prescription that would heal our fear. And the cool thing about it is, it's not getting somebody to vote like you do. It's not getting someone to see the world like you do. Rather, it's something so much deeper and so much more profound, and something that will actually last. It's love. And I know, it almost sounds cliche. Love. Love's going to heal everything. No, really. Love is going to heal this. In 1 John chapter 4, just before this passage I'm showing here, in 1 John chapter 4, it says, this is real love. It's not that we love God, but that he loved us first. So he sent his son as an atoning sacrifice to take away our sins. And then it continues to say, well, this kind of love, such love, it has no fear because it's perfect love. And perfect love expels all fear. If we're afraid, it's for the fear of punishment. And it shows that we have not fully experienced his perfect love. We love each other because he first loved us. We are free to love one another. And it is freeing from so many things, but one of the greatest things that it frees us from is control. And we start to realize that love is so much greater than control. Make no mistake about it, God is so powerful, infinite in his abilities, that he could choose to control everything. But he didn't save the world by controlling it, did he? He saved the world by loving the world through his son. Love is greater than control. And has anybody ever been more free than Jesus? I mean, my goodness, he's so free and he's always loving and he's not trying to prove to people that he matters. He just knows that he matters. There's never been a more important, magnetic person to ever walk the face of the earth. And yet here's Jesus in his conversations full of all the knowledge and all the universe. He's not spending time always trying to prove his own worth. He knows his worth, but rather he's so curious about the person in front of him. Read the stories about Jesus in the gospel accounts. Have you noticed this? He's always asking questions. In the gospel accounts, Jesus is recorded as asking 308 questions. And in the gospel accounts, Jesus is recorded as directly answering 3 questions. He knows everything. He could go on forever. And yet he's so confident and secure and free in knowing, of course I'm worthy. He is God in the flesh. And so he's free to love. As people, we get to love, and it is so freeing because control it only ever maintains. And there's something to be said for that, right? That can make you feel empowered. I can maintain this for as long as I can, but love will revive, and love will multiply. And it multiplies for eternity. The Bible tells us that 3 things last forever. Faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. This is what we really want to pour into. This is what we want to pass on to the next generations. Sure, you can teach your kid how to throw a football. Sure, you can teach your kid how to read, and you should. Sure, you can teach your kid all sorts of things so they have a successful earthly life, and you should. Or the generations that come after you, or whoever it is that you influence in your life. But most of all, whether they are your kids, somebody else's kids, somebody that God has placed in your life to have influence over, you get to love them because you don't have to control them. You get to trust that through love, God would revive them and multiply God's family through them. There was an incredible illustration of this just last week. So last week we had a baptism here at Hope Ames. This is Adam. He was baptized at our 9 o'clock service, and it was right here. And Adam is one of our Kairos students, and he wanted to be baptized during the Hope Ames service because he's experienced such great love from you all, which I think is really cool. And something that happened during the baptism is his friends, his Kairos small group, they were standing in the back along the wall. And they watched him, they celebrated him, they cheered for him. And then as soon as he got baptized and he was done and he's drying off, they left the room, they walked down the hall, and they went and volunteered at Hope Kids like they regularly do. Because they have received love from generations that have come before them. A church that would care so much about college students that they'd produce a ministry that attracts hundreds of them without asking for anything in return. Naturally, go over to Hope Kids on Sunday morning and see how many college students are in there. I was over there this morning. Again, it happened again. Now, that's not to say that Hope Kids is fine. We need more volunteers. Elizabeth Sullivan is our Hope Kids coordinator. She would love to get a phone call from you. And it's a great way to pass on the faith to next generations. But do you see what's happening? It revives and it multiplies the faith. It's not something that can be contained for yourself. As I close quickly here, I've got 3 things that I want to say. Here's how you can practically pass on this faith. Like, here's how we can do this together. The first thing that we do is we seek the truth. If you've heard me this morning, you think, oh, well, the new generations, they come in, they shake everything up, so we're just going to do everything that they want to do at all times. But yes, we adjust and we speak the language of the culture around us. There's no doubt about it. However, the truth that we stand on remains the same. As I sit here, I think about Hope over the last 30 years, and if you were to walk into a Hope service 30 years ago, it would look very different than this. And if we're going to continue to be a faithful church, I would hope that 30 years from now, Hope will look very different. This campus will look very different, because I hope that we continue to speak the language of the culture around us, that we're not asking them to find us, but that we find them. One of our core values here at Lutheran Church of Hope is that we worship God, not tradition. When the tradition gets the Jesus thing going, we do it. We say the Apostles' Creed here. We say the Lord's Prayer together. We partake in the sacraments of communion and baptism. These are great things that have been instilled into our faith that we continue to practice. It gets the Jesus thing going in the room. But we don't worship the things. We worship Jesus. Because Jesus is this true God that has been presented to us, and we don't waver on him. He is the God that transcends generations. No matter the language that we speak, the styles that we speak it, the way that we dress, or any way that we think that we could shake up the status quo, he remains the same. In Hebrews chapter 13, it says that Jesus was the same yesterday, today, and forever. And it's the same message that was being preached to God's people since the beginning of time. In Deuteronomy, we read this in Deuteronomy chapter 6. This is in the same section of Deuteronomy. It's just a few chapters before. And God says to his people, again through the prophet Israel, through the prophet Moses, he says, "Listen, O Israel, listen, my people. The Lord is our God, and the Lord alone." If we're going to pass on the faith, we need to know the faith. We need to know the God of our faith. We need to know God for who he truly is. And we might hear that and think, oh, God alone, that sounds pretty narrow-minded. Well, it's only as narrow-minded as if you were to write a book about me and say that I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, bodybuilding guru, and I'd say, well, that's a nice book, but it's not about me. There has to be some sense of reality here. I am a lanky Bears fan. That's a book about me. And you may want me to be something else, but for me, that truth is good enough. And the reality about God is the truth about God is good enough. We don't adjust who God is. We may adjust the language in which we speak about God to reach people, to speak their language. But we never change who God is. It would be tempting as the new generations come, as the new ideas come, say, you know, God can be whoever you need him to be depending on who you are, but God never depends on people. We depend on God. We depend on the true God. So we seek truth. We seek the true God to pass this on to the generations that come after us. So we pass on the faith as we seek truth, and then we also pass on the faith by we love God truly. We truly love God, and the way that we truly love God might surprise you. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, again, it tells us this. Here's how you love God: with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that he's giving you today. And he's saying this, what's he saying? He's like, love him with everything you got. Later on, Jesus is asked in the New Testament, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus says, well, I don't know, what does the law of Moses say? And the person he's talking to quotes this. Love God with everything you got. And he says, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, yes, that's it. The way that you love God with everything you got is by loving the people around you. And it makes sense. In the same way that if you really want to love a parent, you love their kids. Riverside Bible Camp and Ingemokoboji Bible Camp, they're here this morning and they're amazing ministries. I spent 4 summers working at Ingemokoboji Lutheran Bible Camp, and one of the directors there, his name's Dan. He told us at the beginning of the summer, he said, the way that you will love these parents, the way that you will love these families is by loving their children. If you want to love these parents that you're going to be meeting throughout the summer, you love their kids well. The way that we love God well, the way that we truly love God is by loving his children. And this is one that I just have to thank you for, James. Because I have seen the way that you've loved God's children by the way that you've loved me. I'm one of God's children, right? And you have loved me in a way that I couldn't have possibly expected. Here's a picture of me on my first day of work here at Hope Ames, back when we were a local site meeting at The Link when it was still called Zeke's. And I was 24 years old. 24 years old when you hired me. And I wish I could say that I was standing in front of you that day and I was humble. Respectful awe about the future before me. I was 24 and I was pretty confident. I was like, yeah, this is a perfect fit. And I think I was like 25 in a day when I realized, oh, I really need some help. Desperately. And I think about like, I mean, I actually get embarrassed when I start to think back on some of those early days. I'm like, oh my goodness, when I showed up, you must have thought, this guy, what are we getting with him? He's a kid. What? And the moment that I start to get embarrassed about it, I can't be anymore, because I just remember how much you've loved me through so many seasons of my life in just 6.5 years. I got here and I was finishing up seminary, and you loved me as I was stressed over finals. You loved me as I was getting deeper into a relationship with my future wife. You loved me through our engagement. You loved me as I got married. You loved me as I've become a father. You loved me and given me the grace to continue to lead you, for I don't know why. You've loved me when I've stood right back there and had panic attacks. And those started to fade as I continued to receive the love that was overflowing from you, because it's God's love and you can't contain it for yourself. All the evidence that I could ever ask for. Does this church love God? Does this congregation really love our God? Well, of course, because you have loved me unconditionally. You have loved me when I was just the person coming after you. And it set this fire on inside. I get so excited about what God is doing in these younger generations at our church because I see what God's done through you for me. I've seen this and I've experienced this. And I know that with you, I am a part of this team. We are together, have this responsibility to pass on this faith. And before we ever think that it's about ourselves, here's the third thing. As we pass on this faith, as we seek truth, and as we love God truly in the authentic way that he's asked us to love him, we're just telling his story. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, one more time, it tells us that in the future, your children will ask you, what's the meaning of these laws, these decrees, regulations that the Lord our God has commanded us to obey? What's the purpose of it? And if you have a kid who's growing up in the faith, or if you've ever led somebody in the faith, or if there's anybody in your life that you are influencing in a faith-based sort of way, they've probably asked the question, why are we doing this? God knew this would happen. He said, they will ask you, what's the purpose? And it's so cool. He tells them, you answer by telling them the story of freedom. You remember what you saw in Egypt. You remember when you were kept in slavery, and you remember when I freed you. And here's how he freed them. God sent 10 horrific plagues to defeat evil, to free his people from Egypt. And the way that he did it at the end of this is that he sent his spirit to finally defeat Egypt once and for all for his people to leave. And the way that he would defeat Egypt without defeating his people is they would sacrifice a lamb and paint the lamb's blood over the doorposts of their homes. Unapologetically, this is who we are. We are his children. We are his people. You will paint the blood on the doorposts, then his spirit will pass over and you will be safe. And year after year after year, they would celebrate this Passover festival. They would remember the blood of the lamb that saved them, and the children would gather on the table. So why do we do this? Because God has freed us. Because he's earned us, he's won us freedom. Okay. But then the next natural question is, why the lamb? What was so special about the lamb? Many, many, many years later, as John the Baptist sees Jesus walk into the scene, he says, look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. See, on the doorposts of the universe, God has willingly painted his own family's blood. He has absorbed the pain himself. He has walked into a place we will not walk into on our own. He's come back with a victory. And it's the blood of the true Lamb, the Lamb for us all. We are still sharing the story of freedom, and our freedom is Jesus. So seek truth. Seek God for who he truly is. Love God in the way that he's truly called us to love him. And when they ask why, we point them to Jesus. Doesn't have to do it again. And the generations that come after us, they don't have to suffer in ways that maybe we've suffered. They don't say, I learned it this way, so you learned it that way. If they don't, great. Because we get to tell the story of freedom. The legacy of God's family is freedom, and our freedom is Jesus.